In proportion as the structure of a government gives force to public opinion, it is essential that public opinion should be enlightened.
We are a nation generated by ideas, the beneficiaries of people who took terrific risks and who were a fount, if you will, of originality and ingenuity.
So if people have views that you find offensive, we can either silence them so that nobody challenges us for 4 years, or we can welcome them, debate with them, and try to hash it out, and make us all smarter.
So while we have Christmas coming up later this week, tomorrow is another very special holiday dear to people across the political spectrum and across many generational, ethnic, cultural lines. That is Festivus, the airing of grievances. And frankly, with the year we've had, we all have a lot of problems, and now you people are going to hear about them. But there's a couple of problems specifically that I think are worth addressing this week, given the sheer, I can't swear, so I'll say Charlie Foxtrot, and those of you who know NATO speak know what I'm saying, that is the Trump challenges to the election. The Electoral College met this past week, they ratified the election, and now Trump's saying, well, now we're going to see you on January 6th, because now we'll turn to Congress. He is literally trying to exhaust all possible options rather than pack, which, as somebody who hates moving, I just don't understand why. It's like, just pack while you have the chance, buddy. You don't want to be rushing this. You'll lose all your silverware. His legal team, what he called, and I quote, the elite strike force team, you know, he's promised us Delta Force, and he has delivered the Liechtenstein Navy.
I want to make clear right before we get into this, we are going to deep dive as much as we can into how terrible the legal representation, briefing, in-court demeanor and behavior, how terrible all of it was. And I promise you, however bad we make it look, it's really worse, because I can't do service to how bad this is. I'll let you know at the end of the episode if I thought I did. I don't think I can actually fully convey how terrible this is.
Well, I mean, for starters, we're trying to keep swearing to a minimum, so.
Not even like actual constitutional scholars have kept the swearing to as much of a minimum as we have. There's been plenty of mild profanity from constitutional law professors and practitioners regarding what's going on here, which shows you kind of where we're at.
Are you drinking anything this week?
Yeah, I only woke up like an hour and a half ago, so I am drinking Rishi's. I get Rishi and Spirit Tea mixed up. It's Rishi's Wild Thai Black. It's a really, really good basic black tea that is, if I remember correctly, $28 a pound. It's a great deal. It's like, just think a basic, like what people market as like an English breakfast black tea, but not crappy. Actually good. Can drink it without milk if you want to. I am drinking it with milk, but yeah, it's really good. It's kind of what I drink every morning for the most part. It's just an excellent straightforward black tea. Makes a really good chai.
I mean, I'll give it a chance. I've been upping my tea consumption. I've been looking into Harney and Sons and some of those fancier.
That, and you love cardamom, so you're exactly the kind of person to make your own chai.
I have made my own chais in the past, yeah, and you are right. I do love cardamom. I use it in my coffee. I am not drinking coffee. I've been up for a little bit at this point, and there's no time of day that it is wrong to drink beer. You should base when you drink beer based on how long you've been up. I've been up for several hours. It is thus appropriate for me to be drinking beer. I am drinking Gotta Get Up to Get Down milk stout from Wiseacre Brewing Company in Memphis, Tennessee. It's a coffee milk stout. It's made with Ethiopian coffee. They describe it as a Red Bull vodka for older people and more mature people. So it actually has like a notable caffeine content to it. It's not just, oh, we threw coffee flavoring in, or we roasted the beans early in the process. They try to inject as much coffee as they can into this. So it's a fair description, I guess, to say that it's like a Red Bull vodka for the non-youth. So with our soothing tea and electrifying beer in hand, we should move on to actually talking about the election challenges. So first of all, it's just they haven't gone well, it would be safe to say, right? Like, these have not gone well for the Trump campaign.
The counts of win-loss vary depending on how many of these dozens of cases an individual news source was aware of, and what counts as a win, and how they interpret things. And in court cases like this, there's a lot of things that can happen. A lot of what they're doing is asking for temporary injunctions at the beginning of a case. Court cases, civil cases that are complicated, take years and years to actually fully litigate. The game here that the elite strike force is playing is, of course, I mean, if we make a decision 2 years down the road, that's too late. They're asking for what are called temporary injunctions in most of these cases, which is saying, hey, court, we have this case. We think we're going to win it, but it's going to be meaningless if we win down the road and the other side's allowed to do this thing they're doing or to not do this thing they're supposed to do. Give us an injunction saying that they have to do X, Y, or Z or not do X, Y, or Z, as the case may be. Almost universally across the board, what Team Trump is asking for is take these thousands to hundreds of thousands, however many votes, and invalidate them. Disenfranchise the people who cast these votes. They aren't getting that. So do you count it as a loss if they didn't get their temporary injunction, but they're still seeking something else? Or do you count that as undecided yet? The only thing I know of where they actually, like, quote unquote, won and got what they're asking for was, I believe, in Arizona regarding, like, what is in electoral terms a handful of votes. It was like 200 votes where they weren't properly signed or something. So something very, like, it only affected a few hundred votes, maybe like 200, something like that. And it was a very technical thing and it didn't matter. There's been about 40 cases. There's that one win, quote unquote. And otherwise, they've basically been laughed out of court.
Yeah, and they've been laughed out of court by, as you say, across the board, all levels, including the Supreme Court.
Yep, state, federal district courts, federal appellate courts, the U.S. Supreme Court, and by judges from all over the ideological spectrum, including Trump appointees.
Yeah, I was going to say that, and I think this is a topic we'll probably return to at least once through the episode, the idea that somehow these are just liberals or deep state, like, if it's the deep state, then Trump's an absolute failure because he's then, you know, he's been utterly manipulated by the deep state. And I'm not saying the deep state exists. This isn't obviously hypothetical. But, you know, these are Trump's own appointees. So he just elevated the deep state. And, you know, you can't trust him to take it down if he gives it more power. And some of the people who have attacked him are just the idea that they're liberal, leaving the deep state conspiracy aside, the idea that these are liberals just is absurd to me. Look at their policies. Look at their positions.
Miss Powell, I believe, used the term activist judiciary, which is not what that term means. Calling Justice William Pryor an activist jurist is hysterical. He's more conservative than Justice Thomas. That's a really stupid accusation.
And it's interesting that they use the phrase activist justice.
You're activists because you didn't do anything.
It's the term they used against Amy Coney Barrett.
What that term is supposed to mean is it would be a rough synonym for another moniker is thrown around, and that's legislating from the bench. It's people who have an agenda and are trying to enact it through their position as a judge or a justice. That's not what's happening here. Team Trump is just losing because their arguments are terrible. Basically, the problem that applies to all of their cases is when you're asking for something so radical as throwing out thousands upon thousands of votes and disenfranchising the voters who cast them, if that was something that the courts would ever grant, which is the big if, you would have to have some serious proof. One of the requirements for a temporary injunction is proving that it is more likely than not that you will prevail on the merits as the case moves forward. If you can't prove that, you're not going to get your temporary injunction. The big problem is that people are talking about, like, oh, there's so much fraud. It's obvious. Look at all this fraud. And, you know, Giuliani's gotten up and talked about this. Powell and Ellis have all gotten up and talked about, we have all this fraud and Venezuela rigged our election, I guess. Which is its own species of ludicrous. But then when they go and file with the court and get in front of the court and argue and put on testimony, there's a huge gap between what they're saying to people and what they're saying to the court. And the reason for that is there's penalties for lying to a court. So they can have these theories about all these Dominion machines flip votes or there were fake ballots or ballots were miscounted. But you can't just take conspiracy theories in front of a judge and ask the judge to believe them. You actually have to have evidence, and they just don't have it. So, yeah, what they're saying to the public is massive fraud, huge conspiracy, stolen election, worst tragedy of American democracy in America's history. And then they go into court, and in at least two cases, one in Wisconsin and one in Pennsylvania, they go in with a stipulated set of facts. What that means is that the two sides, and in this case, I'll just call the two sides Republican and Democrat, because that's what it is, agree on what the facts are. They're going to the court and saying, we agree on everything that happened. We see the same events, the same actions, the same conduct, and we're going to argue about the law. Okay, well, if there's a Democrat conspiracy to create fake votes and not count Trump votes, and that's what they did, they aren't going to agree to that stipulated set of facts. That's clearly not what you're actually arguing when you get in front of a judge and your legal practice license is on the line if you lie to them. And that's how this goes. Giuliani got in front of a court and talked about massive voter fraud, but then had to clarify, no, Your Honor, this isn't a fraud case, because the judge asked him, are you alleging fraud? And in this case, they actually had retracted their allegation of fraud in the pleadings because they knew they couldn't substantiate it. He still got up and tried to talk about it during argument. I believe that was also the same hearing where he forgot what judge he was in front of. And not only that, forgot what court he was in, because he referred to an opinion that he thought this judge had written before, which was really an opinion from a federal court, as he sits in state court and apparently doesn't know the difference between the two.
Well, I don't know if it was the same court, but it was part of the same problem, and that it was one of the Pennsylvania lawsuits. It was one of the numerous Pennsylvania. I mean, they all blend together, and that's kind of actually like, you know, there are 40 lawsuits at least. There's just a ton, and it's hard to keep track of them.
It's very hard. That's why I'm kind of just mentioning things as I think of them, because there's no systemized way to approach it. I mean, the Elite Strike Force didn't approach this in a systematized manner. So it's hard to critique what they're doing. And I can't do like an organized presentation on why this disorganized mess is so terrible.
Is there at least a general – what are the general themes to these lawsuits besides I lost and I am being a baby about it? What are the core claims and the themes and the basis and the supposed merit of the cases that the Elite Strike Force, quote unquote, is presenting, just in general, besides, you know, fraud happening?
It's a bunch of vague accusations, and you see this in the court's opinions throwing these cases out repeatedly, that all they have is mere assertions. And that's a legal term meaning you said this thing happened, but you didn't produce any evidence. You can assert that the sky is green. You have to then prove that. They can assert anything. They go in and talk a big game about this is what's happened, but then they have no evidence. They have affidavits from people who either weren't involved or didn't understand what was going on. And so the affidavits aren't worth a ton. They don't really tend to be putting people on the stand, which makes the affidavits suspect as well, because, well, if this person would sign an affidavit and say this thing, why won't they come into court and testify it and be subject to cross-examination? One of the big arguments is that Republican representatives were excluded from the ballot counting process. You know, the way elections work is that representatives from both parties get to be in the room as the ballots are counted and observe the process. And in one, I think, Pennsylvania case, while ballots were still being counted, this lawsuit had already been filed, an attorney is in front of the court, and the court asks, and he's making this argument that Republicans have been denied access, and the judge asks, I'm asking you as a member of the bar, basically saying, don't lie to me or you'll face sanctions. Are there Republican representatives in that room, the room they're talking about? And the attorney's answer was, there's a non-zero number of Republicans in that room. And the judge's response to that, of course, is, then why are you here? He basically almost literally, I forget what he said, it was like, then what do you want from me? They're really arguing about nothing. And that was a case where that attorney might have actually at least very closely tread the line of lying.
That is the most lawyerese answer. There is a non-zero number. I mean, that is almost like – that's something you'd expect in a sitcom. Like, it's not fraud or something like that. Like, that is ridiculous. I mean, and that's also the one I've heard – that's one of the ones I've heard the most is, you know, oh, well, they didn't allow – people into the counting rooms. I'm like, okay, but they've never proved that. And there's also the whole Dominion voting machine thing as well.
And a lot of that wasn't, they weren't able to specifically allege what happened with the machines, but they're trying to ask for custody of them to examine them. But in order to get that, you have to advance some plausible theory as to what you're going to find. And they can't even do that.
Well, speaking of plausible theories, I mean, Giuliani, and this is relevant to my next question, actually. Giuliani said in court, he alleged that maybe the mafia – or no, he didn't just say maybe. He basically said the Philadelphia mafia was involved in hacking the voting machines and in stealing ballots. And I mean, I think that's just one of the most absurd things I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, it's one of those things that that and the Venezuela thing are two of my favorites. Of like, you just made this up. This isn't a real thing at all.
What do you mean by the Venezuela? Explain what the Venezuela thing is.
I believe this was Powell. Powell, and yeah, I think Giuliani and Ellis got involved in it as well, that Venezuela has been involved in hacking our election.
So it's literally the same thing the Republicans have been complaining about for years with Russia, but now we're just using Venezuela.
Except Russia is actually a nation that could pull it off. I don't know what's worse, the idea that our election was hacked or the idea that it was hacked by a failed state.
So we've been talking a lot of smack about the team. And obviously, it's the arguments are basically just, you know, various and sundry conspiracy theories that can't be legally demonstrated or corroborated or...
Or not even close. I'll throw out there, people are saying, well, the burdens of proof are too high and the court system isn't set up to deal with this claim. And just because you can't prove it in court doesn't mean it's true. If there is anything to this, you would have a better record than 40-1, with the one being based on an isolated incident and not your core arguments. Again, that was the Arizona thing about technicalities of how a few ballots were filled out that only affects, you know, 200 something ballots. If there's anything to this, they would have at least gotten a little bit more success somewhere, not a pretty much 100% straight loss record.
Well, and what really ticks me off is how the dialogue's being shaped socially about it. And that is basically people say, well, you really going to tell me there isn't fraud? We all know that the Democrats cheated elections. And I'm like, okay, but a lot of the investigations have actually revealed fraud on the Republican side too. Like, both sides cheat. Also, yeah, okay, occasionally there are irregularities. Occasionally, yes, local political parties on both sides of the aisle cheat. Sure, what the hell ever. But what you're alleging is that because it is known, quote unquote, that people cheat at elections and the Democrats are supposedly these amazingly good cheaters. Because of this, you are saying they stole a national election by an insane number of votes. You are saying that they were smart enough or perhaps stupid enough, I'm not sure, to let the Republicans still make serious gains in the House of Representatives and keep the Senate.
That's another big one, is that these lawsuits don't claim any malfeasance regarding anything besides the presidential election.
Which is just ridiculously incongruous.
Right. When there's a perfectly good explanation for why states elected Republican senators and didn't go for Trump. It's because people didn't vote for Trump and then voted Republican down ticket, because the problem isn't the Republican Party, in their view. The problem is Trump.
Yeah, this was a referendum on Trump, which, you know, before I get on to my next question, this seems like as good a chance to say it as anything. This is absolutely cognitive dissonance. Like, the cognitive dissonance here is just staggering on Trump's part. I don't know why it is staggering to me. I should be more cynical than I am, but I guess I'm not, because the entire logic seems to be, I don't lose because I'm a winner, ergo I have not lost. Somebody has stolen this from me, whether it's Venezuela, Dominion voting machines, the Philadelphia mob. You know, I'll be surprised if next he doesn't start accusing, this is all just Wile E. Coyote logic.
I don't know where you go from Venezuela. The only more outlandish thing would be aliens. Oh, wait, no, we have done it. The Christian right's doing it. It was the devil.
Oh, it was the devil? Yeah, I mean, well, I don't want to talk about the Christian right. One, generally ever, and two, definitely not now. But yeah, we're just going to Wile E. Coyote logic. And one of the things that I find interesting about this, well, not interesting in the sense that, we'll say interesting, but not interesting in the sense of I personally am engaged more in the fact that I am a social psychologist and I find certain things interesting that other people find horrifying. And that is this quote unquote elite strike force team, what you referred to as the Liechtenstein Navy. You know, it has like Sidney Powell on it. It has Rudy Giuliani, a man who hasn't practiced law in my lifetime.
I was about to say, his last case was before we were born. And Ellis. Don't forget about Ellis.
Well, I tried.
No, she's one of my favorites. We're definitely talking about her.
Okay, well, then I'm going to give you a very open-ended question that's really just a formality because I think it's very clear what we all think of the Liechtenstein Navy here. What are your specific thoughts on the members of the Liechtenstein Navy, i.e. the elite strike force team that Trump has representing him legally?
By the way, we really don't mean to insult Liechtenstein with this. It's just that, you know, I'm sure you don't have a navy, so we're not making fun of you. And I'm sure your politics are much more sane than ours. So these people, I have a lot of problems with these people. So let's start with Powell, because she's the one that actually has some experience, real experience as a high-profile attorney. She's the only one who was on the team left who had an experience as a real attorney because the large professional national-level law firm that did represent Trump pulled out very early. Here's a clue. They did that because there isn't any evidence. They didn't want to bring this in front of a court. And that's what good lawyers do. You don't just take whatever your client hands you and take it to the court. You have a responsibility as... What lawyers are technically are is they are officers of the court. You have a responsibility to the integrity of the system to not bring frivolous claims. And if you bring frivolous claims, you can be subject to financial and other sanctions. And we'll get to that later. But, you know, this started going off the deep end right off the bat when their real lawyers said, yeah, we're not doing this. So we'll start with Powell because she's the only one of these three big guys on the team who actually has any legal chops. Unfortunately, she is also insane. So the one who actually has any experience and skill is also actually nuts. She's actually off the Elite Strike Force team because she was tweeting things that were too crazy for Trump, to the tune of like 100,000 tweets in a matter of days. She's the one who has the most extreme conspiracy theories. Hers are the ones regarding people taking money from China. I don't have the articles pulled up because my internet's being dumb, but she had... what was the thing she said she was going to go biblical on? You remember that? Help me out. There was some conspiracy theory she had that she was just going to blow up and show who was involved in it.
Are you referring to the one that where she said that like everyone from Brian Kemp, Hillary Clinton, and Bernie Sanders had all bonded together and like this cabal of evil had tried to dethrone Trump? Is that the one?
Yeah, and that's a good example because that's basically a QAnon theory, and she has been tweeting, among other things, actual QAnon content.
I'm going to point something else out about her that I think is really relevant to this. Fox News won't touch her. She's a big proponent of this Venezuela theory, and mm-hmm. Fox News's Geraldo Rivera said, "You're telling me that a man, quote, who couldn't even make the red lights work in Venezuela, end quote." Like, because she says that Chavez, who is dead, I'm not sure how he's involved, but she says he was involved. So from beyond the grave, you're saying a man who couldn't, while he was alive and corporeal, do anything effective is now somehow interfering with an election. That is insane. Even Tucker Carlson, who is not notorious for his high standards of evidence or the rigor of his journalism, even Tucker Carlson said, "Hey, can I review your evidence?" And she said, "No."
Yeah, she just wouldn't produce anything. Now I was going to mention that yeah, Fox News and Tucker Carlson specifically won't touch you. And like I said, your tweets were crazy enough that Trump took issue with it. Let's think about how insane that is.
Well, again, she's even going beyond the, like, in terms of like completely unparsimonious explanations. Again, like you said earlier, at least Russia could hack an election.
I mean, they already hacked other stuff. That's the other thing in the news recently. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they could do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, whereas, like, she's doing the same type of claim that the left made about the previous election, but on crystal meth. And then, yeah, you know, when even Rudy Giuliani, who, you know, Mr. the Mafia hacked this election, said, quote, "Sidney Powell is practicing law on her own. She is not a member of the Trump legal team. She is also not a lawyer for the president in his personal capacity," end quote. Yeah, it doesn't seem like you're a shining beacon star there.
Yeah, so to transition, we're at a point where Rudy Giuliani is the better choice for Trump's personal lawyer than her. Let's talk about that.
That's a really sad sentence.
Yep. Somehow Giuliani ended up in charge of this whole mess, again, despite not practicing law for nearly 30 years. And when he did practice law, he was a district attorney. He was a prosecutor. We'll just start right off with my favorite. He got up in front of a court and was asked what level of scrutiny should apply and said, "I don't know, the normal one." I know that non-attorneys aren't familiar with this, but the point is that an attorney has to know this. In federal court, when someone is claiming that their individual rights have been violated, which is what is at the core of most of these suits, is they're claiming that voters' rights have been violated, you have to determine what level of scrutiny applies. There is rational review, intermediate scrutiny, and strict scrutiny. To do the really brief explanation of this, intermediate scrutiny is very rare, so I just won't explain it. It's in between the two. That's all you need to know about it. Rational basis means that the government can basically do anything it wants in this area as long as there is a rational basis for it, as long as there is a reasonable government interest in legislating or acting in this area, we're going to let them do that. Strict scrutiny applies to, like, when the government discriminates based on race or ethnic origin or religion or national origin or things like that. Strict scrutiny means that you need a compelling government interest, and the means need to be narrowly tailored, meaning the government can discriminate along these lines, but it's really hard for them to do so. Strict scrutiny normally means the government loses. Rational basis normally means the government wins. That's just the general rule in lawsuits. And most of your fights in a lawsuit are about what level of scrutiny applies. And once you get to the answer of what level of scrutiny applies, often the case is basically over at that point. The game's done.
So which is the usual level of scrutiny, Austin?
Yeah, that's the problem. There isn't one. But Giuliani clearly doesn't even know what he's talking about at all. Not only does he not know that there isn't a normal level of scrutiny, he doesn't know what we're talking about, because then he said in response to the judge's question, "Well, I don't know what you're referring to when you say strict scrutiny." He just didn't know the term. This would be like your mechanic not knowing what an air filter is.
Okay, see, I missed that one. And I'm not a Rudy Giuliani fan at all. He's really a figurehead that's used by people who oppose criminal justice reform to show that broken window policing works. It doesn't. But they like to use them as an example. So I already have a bone to pick with this dude. And so I have been following it myself, but there's just so much weirdness around Giuliani as a lawyer and how he's been choosing to represent
him. He basically isn't one. I'll throw in here, because this is where it's relevant. I forget which law school, but a prestigious one. A law school constitutional law professor commented that any student who's received a D from him would have done better in this hearing than Giuliani.
That's Justin Levitt from Loyola Law School in L.A.
That was Levitt. Okay, thank you for remembering who that was. I'm terrible at remembering names and who quotes come from. I just remember the quotes because they're funny.
I have my note because the other part of the quote is even funnier, because he said, quote, "Watching the clown car level of facepalm and competence here is embarrassing for the participants. The Trump legal team are nothing but Keystone cops," Keystone and cops both with a K, "whose arguments have been slapstick stupid. I've had law students that I've given a D to in con law that would do a better job in court than Rudy Giuliani. This would all be very funny if it wasn't so serious," end quote.
Yep. So a student who got a D in constitutional law at least passed, which means you know what strict scrutiny is. You may not be able to explain it or apply it very well, but you at least know the definition. Speaking of definitions, Rudy Giuliani also doesn't know the definition of opaque.
Oh, big words, Your Honor.
He said, "I don't know what you mean by opaque. I'm assuming that means you can see through it." The judge says, "No, it means you can't." And Rudy Giuliani's response is, "Big words, Your Honor." Speaking of, I'll throw in here, big words. The pleadings they file in all 40 of these cases are predictably bad, and predictably a lot of copy and paste and resubmitting the same things because, well, it's hundreds and hundreds and thousands of pages of documents submitted in basically, in many cases, a matter of hours. But even with that in mind, the level of work on these is atrocious. There was one where the word district court was misspelled two different ways. Those aren't big words.
District has two syllables in it, Austin. It has two syllables. That is a lot.
Right. Yep. There was another one. This is my favorite, where and this happened a lot. You can amend your complaint or your petition if you missed facts or found new evidence. It's very common. The plaintiff in a case very often files an amended petition or an amended complaint, whichever one it may be, depending on the context. One of their later documents referred to their second amended complaint, but someone typed that capitalized as Second Amendment complaint.
That would have been a lot more interesting. I mean, that's a good amendment. I really wonder how that's been applied here.
Right. Yeah. Someone clearly doesn't know what they're doing and thinks, oh, right. Someone's listening to dictation or like was told to type this or something. And yeah, they come up with the Second Amendment is somehow involved in all this.
The chimpanzee that is doing their work for them on the his typewriter had a malfunction. That's the.
Or maybe it's like a chat bot. I don't know. I wonder if you had if you fed a computer program a bunch of election law complaint filings and told it to do Trump's legal work for it, would it spit out something like this?
Quite possibly. So let's go to the third member of the Liechtenstein Navy here.
Oh, wait, we can't leave Giuliani yet.
Oh, we can't leave Giuliani yet? But we...
Because we haven't mentioned his hair dye.
Oh, well. That's almost a little bit too personal. But go ahead.
I mean, it's just a great, it doesn't actually have any impact on his legal abilities, but it's a perfect visual encapsulation of what's going on here as he's sitting in front of cameras talking and he's just got this black liquid streaming down both sides of his face.
He's not just talking, he's gesticulating wildly and basically yelling, I'm melting, I'm melting, the case is melting.
Yeah, the case is melting right in front of your eyes. I wish I had the language in front of me. Courts have dismissed these things with the most scathing language, and courts don't normally do that. Normally, when someone loses a court case, there was at least a justiciable claim, a colorable claim to relief, and you dismiss it with respect because, hey, there was a real argument here. There's a reason the courts had to get involved and make this decision between you two as a neutral third party. We're not saying that you're an idiot for filing this. The courts have come as close as they can to outright saying you're an idiot for filing this in these cases. But anyway, yeah, moving on to Ellis. Ellis has proclaimed herself a constitutional law expert. She started her career after law school in 2011, which, okay, we're not talking about someone with a ton of experience. She worked for, I think, less than a year at the prosecutorial office for a smaller county in, or maybe, I forget which county, a county in Colorado. And got fired for gross incompetence. She was basically handling traffic level offenses and got fired for gross incompetence.
How does that happen?
Well, she basically didn't know what she was doing and lost cases and didn't comply with the law. And it's basically what happens when you go into proceedings and file things without actually knowing the law that you're working with. Some of it had to do with violations of the Victims' Rights Act. The best part about this is that she's claimed since then that she wasn't really fired. But if you look at the publicly available proceedings from her unemployment compensation claim, she filed for unemployment after losing this job. The governmental body in Colorado who's responsible for that said, no, you were fired for cause. And under Colorado law, therefore, you are not entitled to unemployment benefits. She essentially argued in that case that, no, I'm entitled to unemployment benefits because I did my best and I'm just not intellectually or educationally equipped for this kind of work. She admitted in the course of these proceedings that she does not have the background, the skills, the legal expertise, and the abilities to handle traffic court cases.
See, I knew she'd faked her credentials. I knew she wasn't equipped for this. I did not know this. You're telling me she used the I'm dumb, be nice to me excuse?
Or at least, actually, that wasn't in her filings. That is at least the finding of the committee saying, no, she's entitled to unemployment benefits. So that was the reason she won.
Oh, so it's the government saying, you are too dumb, we have pity on you. That's even worse.
Yeah, let me get the posture correct there. That was the committee or the review board or whatever body makes those determinations, deciding that, yeah, you did your best. You weren't intentionally terrible.
I have words, but they all have four letters. So let's just move on.
So moving on, she then ends up working for a legal policy institute that's a subsidiary of Focus on the Family. Because she published a book about biblical principles of constitutional law and why we need to make... I think the basis of the book was why we basically need to make America a Christian nation again, because it was that at one point, apparently. That is the sole basis on which she claims the title of constitutional law expert.
Except she was a professor of legal studies. That's what it was. She was a professor of legal studies, but right. Then she pretends she is a professor of con law, which is very different.
That is not the same. Yeah, she was not at a law school. She was not teaching people who are about to get JDs. She was teaching undergraduates Yeah, she is absolutely lying. I don't know what exactly her involvement has been. She seems to be kind of like with the top people, but she also seems to just kind of be there. I don't know if she's the person who did the typing that led to Second Amendment complaint and misspelled district court, or if I don't know.
I mean, from what I can tell, her involvement seems to be being relatively normal looking and sounding, because Giuliani obviously is failing at that. And then Sidney Powell, I mean, yeah.
Sidney Powell looks like an attorney, but then.
But then she opens her mouth.
or starts typing.
Yeah.
Again, I just can't get past the thing of your tweets were so crazy that Trump fired you.
So, okay, that's his legal team. That's Trump's legal team for us, which is just, you know, I mean, and obviously there's a lot of things we could talk about, and we can't go into all of it because it's just insane. But there are like three things I do think we need to talk about, even if only briefly. And the first one, and this is where I have actually a lot of strong opinions, is the disparity between press conferences, and this is where Sidney Powell shines, and the legal briefs that they file. And this kind of goes into stuff we've already talked about, but
right.
For me, and this also ties into, say, like the claims of, oh, but there were witnesses. And I'm like, okay, but they were crap witnesses. Or, okay, does it not enter your tiny mind that somebody in a highly politicized environment could be motivated to lie? Because you're all about that when it's anything legal involving somebody you like.
Right. But then when it's in my benefit for people not be lying, it's, well, it's an affidavit.
Oh, yeah, because nobody perjures themselves. That's unheard of.
Yeah. Just let me tell you from personal experience dealing with much smaller scale things, just because a notary stamped something doesn't mean that the document is true.
Yeah. That's one of the most insidious things from the specific legal team, is the sheer discontinuity. The glaring discontinuity between what they say at press conferences, what Trump tweets about, what is reported on in the far right, because it's not even Fox News, even Fox News is not giving credence to this. So you are dealing with one American news network, QAnon, alt-right stuff. They're being fed this bullcrap about how, you know, this is going to be the most important Supreme Court case. They have evidence that's just going to blow this out of the water. And they keep saying that again and again and again and again about every single case. And the latest one, as far as at least when we're recording this, I'm sure there may be a new one by Tuesday. But when we're recording this, the one is somebody swears, they pinky promise, in fact, that they heard Justice Roberts say, I know he was going to make sure Trump wasn't elected.
Oh, right.
Again.
This is Lynn Wood.
Yeah. I'm like, that is.
We haven't talked about him yet. Yeah, I forgot. He said that he heard Justice Roberts say with some profanity that he's going to make sure that Trump isn't elected personally. That's ridiculous. I would have to see really good proof to believe anything like that. That's like, does he have a recording? Did someone overhear this phone call and talk to him about it? He wasn't on the phone call. I know the Supreme Court justices aren't on the phone with L. Lynn Wood.
That's confirmation bias. The fact that people are taking this as evidence is confirmation bias out the wazoo. To me, this is undermining faith in the courts. This is an active undermining of faith in our system of government on the part of the Trump administration.
It's grossly irresponsible because you're telling people this big game about this election was stolen and this is a massive amount of fraud and treason and insurrection, but you know you can't actually substantiate it. Any of it. So you're just bloviating in front of cameras, telling people that this happened. These people are responsible if someone does some crazy Pizzagate or God forbid Oklahoma City bombing level reaction based on what they think happened here, because these people are saying these terrible things happened.
Well, I'm going to say two things to that. The first one is funny, bloviating, big words, Your Honor. The second one is, lest people think we're being melodramatic. You know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago with David Keating, and it's only gotten worse, that people are using the rhetoric of war. The Jericho March, okay, it only had mild property destruction, only mild riots. That stuff can escalate. This is actively encouraging. I do not think it is melodramatic to bring up things like the OKC bombing.
The problem with the Jericho March isn't what was done there. It's what people like Eric Metaxas are saying. When Eric Metaxas gets up repeatedly and says he's willing to die for this and that, you know, conservative Christians have to fight to quote unquote the last drop of blood over Trump being president or not, I don't care what he thinks he means by that. People are going to hear that and take him at his word.
Well, I do think it was the Jericho March's fault in some ways, because now you have a bunch of people saying they're getting direct revelations from God and using the language of, like, this is authoritarianism I never thought I'd even see in the United States. Like, literally,
McVeigh was terrible, but can you imagine if he was a religious zealot on top of everything?
Yeah, like, the, you're saying God has revealed to me that Trump actually won. We need to conquer for God. I'm like, this is like the Deus Vult crowd on crystal meth, the people who think the Crusades were a good thing. This is worse. And that's, and to say nothing of even let's say you think that's melodramatic. Let's say you think, yo, you're bloviating, big words, Your Honor, and you're being ridiculous about the OKC bombing. Yes, by the way, big words, Your Honor. I'm saying it now. That's going to be one of the jokes on the podcast from here on out. Just use it whenever you want in good health.
It's like you said earlier, it should be a meme.
It really should be a meme. But let's say you think that we're being ridiculous about threats of violence. Okay, what I don't think we're being ridiculous about is the already tenuous faith in the separation of powers on both sides. The right is now undermining that as much as the left. The idea, you know, the Supreme Court refused to hear the challenges. People are already saying, oh, this is because the Supreme Court are cowards. Neil Gorsuch, Amy Coney Barrett, and Brett Kavanaugh are traitors.
Right, because they – and we've talked about this before when we were talking about Trump's Supreme Court appointments. It's this idea that they owe him personal loyalty.
Yeah, and that was the thing that was the, that has been a, levied against them as if it were an accusation. And everyone's like, that's not fair. It's really unjust of the left to claim that that's what they would think these people would do. And I'm like, it was unjust of the left to think that the justices would do it. But I don't think a lot of Trump supporters have the right to say that, because that seems to have been their own expectation.
It was Trump's expectation. Trump explicitly said he had high hopes for his chances at the Supreme Court because he had friends there, as he saw it.
I mean, I think the entirety of Trump's response here, it's how he's always done stuff. It's how he's always tried to operate, you know, petty lawsuit after petty lawsuit, harassment, wars of attrition. This works when you're trying to screw over Atlantic City property owners so you can build another casino. It doesn't work in national politics, Donald. Just having a story in public that makes you look really good and then having a completely different legal strategy, yeah, I'm sure that works when you're dealing with your umpteenth divorce or paternity settlement, Donald, but I don't think it works in politics. And that's what Donald Trump is learning the hard way here, is you can't be a bully on the national stage with the same strategies that you use to be a bully when you're some rich businessman who's been a corporatist slimeball his entire life.
You've upped the scale so much of the stakes. It's, you know, the worst thing that happens there is that the people you've been having your personal business dealings with decide that you're a putz. Okay, fine. And you don't fool anybody there, by the way. No one is a fanatic willing to believe everything you say when you're talking about their money and their real estate dealings. Everyone involved in that who believed Trump's bloviating and got burned by it, changed their mind and said, well, I guess that guy's not trustworthy. That isn't going to happen here. The Proud Boys aren't going to sit down and calmly think and decide, oh, well, I guess Trump was lying and wasn't that great a person. I should go home now. That isn't going to happen because, A, you're dealing with higher stakes of, you know, people have invested the entirety of their self-worth and their view of themselves and their identities into politics. And B, it's just too big and there's too many other sources adding to the misinformation stream. The problem here is you've combined blind nationalism and QAnon and Trump and Sidney Powell, and this thing is going to snowball into something that nobody who got the ball rolling ever expected it to be. I don't think Trump is trying to start a violent insurrection. I also don't think he cares if he does. But I don't think he really expects that or is trying to do that intentionally. I think he's trying to stay in the White House because he's a selfish and, like you said before, can't comprehend that maybe he lost a fair election, fair and square. But when he leaves the White House and goes on to do his thing, I mean, both in the religious and the non-religious spheres, you know, the Giuliani Powell Ellis team, the Liechtenstein Navy, has said there's no way that Biden will be president because the fraud is so obvious. Well, then what do people conclude when Biden is eventually president? What do you have to do to resolve your own cognitive dissonance and say, well, they said that the fraud was so obvious that this could never happen, but it did happen. It must be even worse than we thought. The government must be even more corrupt than they said. on the religious side, it's even worse. You have Eric Metaxas and other people saying God has personally told us and guaranteed us that Trump will be president because God has chosen him as his anointed. He's the American David. And we know from God that Biden will be president. Well, what happens when Biden becomes president? What do you do to resolve that cognitive dissonance? Again, I'm afraid that people aren't going to sit down and think, I guess we were wrong. People are going to come to other conclusions. If Trump isn't president on January 21st, the conclusion might be, well, Trump's still going to be president eventually. We're just going to do some more extreme things to make sure it happens because that's God's will. This is an incredibly dangerous game, and it isn't going to end well.
The least dangerous outcome is that he runs again in 2024 and completely obliterates obliterates the Republican Party. But no, I don't think it's wrong to worry about violent insurrection. Again, considering the rhetoric, considering the fact that, I mean, you were the history major. You can correct me if you think I'm wrong. But a lot of this sounds way too much like the Southern rhetoric of what happened before Lincoln was inaugurated. And I'm not saying that Biden's about to be another Lincoln. I'm saying that the rhetoric around Lincoln was the South wanted a war, and so they fear-mongered and rumor-mongered and openly lied, and they got people riled up enough to secede. You see this, you know, you see Alan West, the chairman of the Republican Party of Texas, saying we should have a union of states that actually follows the Constitution.
I was about to say that's actually been floated as an idea.
That is Confederate level secessionism. And while it's not as morally repugnant as doing it over the right to own people, it's still stupid. And then there is also the crusading logic. And I'm like, okay, again, religious people being riled up with the idea of righteous causes that they have to take and using the rhetoric of bloodshed. We've seen people attack abortion clinics. We've seen people attack Muslims. We've seen people, especially with this late Roman era version of a civic religion's Christianity, we've seen where that takes us in America. We've seen where that takes us in other countries, and it never takes us anywhere good. And so I don't think it's insane or stupid to worry about that. And that is, to me, the scariest thing of all of this. The only way out of it I kind of see is that even people like Lindsey Graham are saying, this is not proof. You need to prove this. If you don't prove this, we can't side with you. But even there, it might be too little too late, because it doesn't take an overwhelming majority to start violent insurrection, and it doesn't take an overwhelming majority to cause problems on a national stage, you know?
Right. It takes a very violent minority that will fail in what they try to do, but will harm innocent people in the process and just make the entire national picture that much worse for everybody. We haven't even mentioned the fact that people are calling for Trump to impose martial law and use the Insurrection Act.
Yeah, I think I might have been repressing that, because now it's all come flooding back to me. Yeah, this is fakakta. This is absolutely fakakta. I'm not saying prepare for the worst or anything like that. I'm not a pessimist, but I'm also not an optimist. I'm a realist, and the realistic thing is here is this is a black swan event. I do think this is another black swan event.
Because 2020 needed another one.
Oh yeah, 2020 has been it's just been a flock of black swans. I think there've been more black swans in this year than in the entirety of Australia. But this is another one. Elections have been, I think, irrevocably harmed. At least we will never go back to the way they were. And I think that the fact that people are openly calling for insurrection or the use of the Insurrection Act to enforce political will in defiance of a free election, that's Russia stuff. That's not us, or it shouldn't be us. And that's now been floated. Even if it's never normalized again, it's been floated, and you can't take things back.
Right. You can't put that genie back in the bottle. Same thing goes for this constant challenging of elections in courts because we don't like the result. That's going to be part of the playbook now.
Well, that's a depressing note to go out on, but big words, Your Honor.
I was about to say, at least in this case, that part of the playbook was used by people who are utterly incompetent. And to come back to what I started with in conclusion, I don't think I did justice to how bad the legal activity has been. I think people should go and read that and maybe talk to other lawyer friends about it, or listen to commentary from lawyers who know even more than I do, because they actually are constitutional law experts, Miss Ellis, to just understand what a clown show it's been.
Yeah, it is, and it absolutely has been a clown show. Obviously, this is a contentious topic. If there is something you feel we haven't done right with this issue, we will be glad to respond to it. So, quote unquote, on air, I guess. It's a podcast, not a radio show, but we'll use the vernacular. otherwise, I hope everyone has a Merry Christmas. Hanukkah's over, so can't wish you happy Hanukkah. But any other holiday you may be celebrating, we will be back. Take care, guys.
This has been Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Snarkiness. If you like what you heard, please consider giving us a share on social media or leaving us a review on your podcasting platform of choice. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can find us at facebook.com/libertysnark or send us an email at contact@libertysnarkpodcast.com. Thank you so much for listening.